Good evening. James McCanny here, December 22nd, 2011. And welcome, everybody. Almost Christmas time, 2011, and almost the end of the year. Couple quick announcements. Tonight, I will be a guest first hour on Coast to Coast AM. First hour talking about two topics. The comet that hit the sun last week. Really didn't hit the sun, but it passed through. I'll be talking a little bit about that tonight. But then also I'll be discussing for the international audience on Coast to Coast the resignation of the two hurricane specialists about a week and a half ago, which never really hit the mainstream media very hard. Was kind of held back, but basically I covered my show last week dealing with this topic of the Hurricane Prediction Center. It's the National Hurricane Prediction Center, the two top. I will comment a little bit about that on this show, the follow-up from the hurricane predictors. Leaving the business, so to speak, in a trail of smoke, basically stating that they had no predictive value over the last 20 years. Quite an admission. So, and I have a little bit of analysis of a listener. I'll be reading that in a short while, because I was kind of scratching my head wondering if there was some ulterior motive, always looking for that. But at any rate, later tonight I'll be on Coast to Coast AM discussing that topic, and then Sunday, Christmas Day, I will be a guest with James Jancic, Feet to Fire, it's called, out of Chicago. And, of course, internationally heard, listened show around the world. And I'll be doing a short interview on there discussing kind of Christmas 2011 and kind of the state of the nation. We'll see where it goes, but that'll be this coming Sunday. Feet to Fire, James Jancic. Okay, I'm going to talk a little about more detail about this comet that was crashing into the sun as I did my show last week. And I'm going to start by giving a quote here. Now, understand that I've talked many times about the interplay of NASA. NASA doesn't say anything. They have these other pages that they directly support. This one that I'm going to read from is from the Naval Research Laboratory. It's an arm of the military, and all of these organizations, of course, work together. They're all government-supported, but this page is talks about sun-grazing comets. And so before that comet hit the sun, I want to read from this page what the guy says. And, of course, it's one arm removed from NASA. This is not NASA talking, but then it's defending NASA and all the NASA theories. And it says this was published before the comet ever got to the sun on the 12th, apparently on the 12th of December, and the comet got to the sun on the 15th. And it says, welcome to the beginning of the end of Comet Lovejoy's billions of years-long journey through space. In less than 10 hours' time, so this is 10 hours before the comet was to hit the sun, in less than 10 hours' time, the comet will graze some 120,000 kilometers above the solar surface through the several million-degree solar corona and, in this person's opinion, completely evaporate. Now, this is quite the story because, of course, it did not evaporate. But you see how convenient. This is not NASA talking. This is someone who understands NASA's theories and is predicting that that comet would evaporate upon getting near the sun. Well, of course it should. Here's what they're saying about it. A 600-foot-wide nucleus. Well, how absurd. This comet was so huge, it was on the scale of the sun. And by the way, it went all the way through the solar atmosphere, came out the other side, spent a number of hours in the solar atmosphere, came out the other side, developed a tail, and became a comet again. But here's what NASA is saying, that this was a 600-foot-wide nucleus. This is about the size of two football fields. Okay, two football fields. Everybody knows what that is. Now, with a light dusting of snow on this, and we are supposed to believe that this thing developed this gigantic comet tail for days and days and days before it got to the sun. Then it spent many hours in this 2 million degree solar corona past next to the sun, where it's just blazing. I mean, you can't even begin to imagine how hot it is. It's hot enough to vaporize all the metals that exist. There is no molecular structure in the sun. Everything is in molecular form. So this rock or dust and snow, something, a light dusting on the top of two football fields. Now imagine a football field with a light dusting of snow on an average spring sunny day. It would be gone by the time the sun hit it in a couple minutes. But this comet with this light dusting of snow supposedly goes through the solar atmosphere and comes out the other side and becomes a comet again. Of course, this person was predicting that it would have evaporated. Well, of course it should have, but then it comes out the other side, and everybody's like, whoa, what an amazing ice ball comet. That little icy wanderer sure was a healthy little icy wanderer. The denial at NASA is just staggering. I mean, how can these people sleep with themselves at night? Let's talk about some other very scientific aspects of this, in that the curvature of the tail. Let's look at the curvature of the tail. Now, the tail was curved in the wrong direction. Let's start with that. The tail coming in was leading the comet, in front of the comet. And if the material was leaving the comet nucleus, that would give a particular shape to the comet tail. The comet tail was in the opposite direction. The curvature of the comet tail was in the opposite direction of what would be expected if this material were leaving the comet nucleus. After the comet passed through the solar atmosphere, after it was on its way out from the sun, once again, the curvature of the tail was incorrect for material leaving the comet nucleus. It should have trailed along behind, kind of like smoke leaving a smokestack. Let's take an example. Say it's a relatively not very windy day, but a slight breeze, maybe 1 or 2 miles an hour, and there's smoke coming out of a smokestack. Well, there's a certain shape that you would expect that smoke stream to have coming out of the chimney. If it were the opposite, you'd go, that's pretty strange. What's going on here? So it's like the smoke were coming from outside and coming, being drawn into the smokestack. That's the kind of shape that the comet tail had. But not a whisper from any of the NASA experts. They don't want to look into this any deeper than to give their nursery rhyme response, Mother Goose fairy tale science, that it was an icy wanderer. Every time recently that a comet comes in and does something near the sun, it does things that just should not happen. But what a level of denial that these people can have. That plus in outer space, there's no surface pressure. One of the things that keeps moisture and snow and things like that in its form on Earth, given that the temperature is correct, is the fact that we have vapor pressure. It kind of holds things, it gives a pressure. If you go to a higher altitude, then snow needs to be much colder to exist. And so to imagine this comet went through the solar atmosphere and spent hours there. Now, you can't even imagine the heat, the dynamic pressure of the solar wind blasting this comet nucleus and in that vicinity of the sun. And to imagine something the size of two football fields with a light dusting of snow getting in there and coming out the other side and keep ticking is beyond ridiculous, absurd. But how can NASA scientists continue to go with this? And then what's the story? Well, it's like the domino principle. Once one of these theories falls, then the whole cascade turns up. Well, if comets aren't dirty snowballs, what are they? Well, I've had the answer for decades. It's the discharge of the solar capacitor. And so the errors with NASA, of course, obviously this comet nucleus was planet-sized. They are in denial. They can't say that this thing was planet-sized, it discharged the solar capacitor. That leads to the whole laundry list of questions. Well, what about Velikovsky said this? What if this came near Earth? Well, with this electrical discharge, can't we tap into this and get rid of our oil dependency and nuclear power dependency? You see that the all of the interdependencies of the scientific community. What about all the magazine, Discover Magazine? What about the Discover Magazine online with the clowns that we call them the Trekkies, the NASA Trekkies that hang out there and try and defend NASA science? Astronomy Magazine, Sky and Telescope, National Geographic, the newspapers, the websites all linked to NASA, all promoting this. Where do these, you know, it's just a cascade. We're talking about decades and decades, probably half of 100 years of bad science being promulgated. And this is like the two hurricane prediction scientists for 20 years predicting hurricanes. Everybody listening to them and going, wow, how do these guys do this? I saw one analogy on a blog where a listener said, blogging, commenting on these hurricane experts quitting, he said, and it is very true, that the way they predict hurricanes, that there will be between 6 and 12 named storms would be like saying that a football team is going to score between 12 and 21 points in a game. It's like, you know, it has no meaning. There's no real predictive value there. And they cannot predict when a hurricane will occur or under what conditions, and even a week before the hurricane might develop, they can't predict it. So this Las Vegas type of prediction was absolutely absurd. But they had the wherewithal to come up to the microphone and say what we're doing is ridiculous. And, you know, when that happened, let me switch over to talk about these hurricane predictors quitting. When that happened, I was scratching my head. I thought, now what on earth is going on here? Tier 2 scientists just don't do this, especially guys in that level of position. Remember, they were covering these hurricane stories, giving pat answers for why hurricanes did things during a time when we had a tremendous number of manipulated storms. Katrina, the many storms in Florida, the five hurricanes that rolled over Cuba like bowling balls 1 week apart 2 years ago. And these guys are in their positions trying to cover, telling you that hurricanes are formed from warm water, giving a cover story for the guys, the mill guys, who are running these satellites, driving these storms into U.S. population centers. Katrina. So anyway, with that in mind, I'm going to read, and I really like this. A listener wrote in, and was commenting. So I'm going to read verbatim this email I got from a listener. I believe this listener is actually in Canada. Here it is, what the listener said, and I like this analysis because I was digging myself for something. Why are these guys doing this? What's the story behind the story? And of course, the news media never covered any of this. They never, they reported it in a mild manner. The story I saw came from Ottawa. It didn't come from any U.S. press source. It didn't come from Time magazine. It didn't come from the New York Times or the Washington Post or L.A. newspapers. No, it came from an Ottawa, Canada newspaper. So anyway, let me read what this listener says. And I kind of like this, and there might be partial truth in this or partial good analysis, but something else is going on here. And it says, "Hi, Jim, the way I see it, it's possible that The powers that be may have twisted the arms of these two hurricane predictor scientists to quit and say what they did. This way, the global warming business tycoon nutcases and the powers that be could use what these two guys said to have carte blanche to play around with the weather, especially hurricanes, and cause as much damage where they want and whenever they want. And these goons would have the perfect excuse to do this because they could simply fall back on what two reputable hurricane predictors and scientists had said, and they could simply blame it on unpredictable weather systems. And then in quotes, it's this is a quote supposedly coming from the goons that run the world and want to use the hurricane prediction or the hurricanes for damage. Anyway, it says in quotes, "Look, we're going to have to make global decisions for the people of Earth because global warming is real and now causes weather, hurricanes, to be unpredictable and a danger to everyone around the world." And you can, it says, "I can see very big money to be made by powerful people." And you know, Al Gore will jump all over this to his advantage. And I like that analysis. And I was personally, as I said, digging for something, some shred of analysis to hang my hat on. And I like that. I don't know how much of that would be the case, but somewhere in there is a ray of truth. I don't believe anything that comes out of standard science. And we just remember that these guys don't have carte blanche to talk. They can give their fairy tale science all they want, but it's also very filtered. And so I'm looking really for a reason, too, for why these guys would quit, and then that would come out and make a national announcement to that effect. Okay, on to, let's see. Okay, just to follow up on this comet that passed through the sun. What we have here, everybody, is a planet-sized object. It came in from the south, and now they are calling it a Kreutz comet. They say, I've talked about this on my show, how ridiculous this is. They say that in the 1800s, a comet broke up somewhere in the far reaches of the solar system, and that periodically, in fact, quite frequently, these comets come in from the south. And they're always coming in from kind of that same area. Well, let's analyze this just quickly. If a comet broke up, you know, 150 years ago, somewhere in the solar system, the pieces would not be raining in, at, you know, like onesie-twosies 150 years later, every other day. No, this thing would have disseminated. Any pieces that were going to fall into the sun would have done it long, 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 long ago. And there wouldn't be anything left. So once again, more NASA fairy tale science. And they keep repeating it. But what do we have? Really, we have a planet-sized object came in, discharged the solar capacitor, and it did affect the sun. 4 days before, there was a back-to-back mega CME explosions, two of them on the sun. And I watched as this comet came into the sun and got closer. Now, this is what I didn't see last week because NASA cut the feed right before my show, so I couldn't see it. But afterwards, I went back, and sure enough, there they put the feed back up that I couldn't see before the show last week because the comet was hitting the sun as I did my show. But at any rate, the comet started causing the sun to pulse. The sun was on the sides of the sun. It was going whoosh, whoosh, whoosh on the frequency of about every hour, something the sun simply doesn't do on its own. And so then the comet passed through the sun and magically comes out the other side, forms a tail. And so where's the snow, everybody, that formed the tail? Of course, NASA is speechless. NASA had something like 21 instruments trained on the sun to watch what it firmly believed would be the evaporation of a comet as it came close to the sun. Well, the comet didn't evaporate, and NASA still is trying to maintain its story of the ice going through the sun, something, a dusting of snow on something the size of two football fields. And it's that little icy wanderer. okay. NASA is going to have a Merry Christmas this year. They're still getting their money for ridiculous fairy tale science. Okay, but anyway, we do have a new planetary object in the solar system. Quickly, it doesn't appear that it would be any kind of threat to Earth. I don't know what its orbit is after going through the sun. Obviously, that orbit is going to be very much modified. So I assume what's going to happen with this comet is the next time in, it's going to dive deeper into the solar atmosphere, probably just stop there and fall into the sun, and then it would really be just ripped apart into atomic form, and maybe make a few solar flares. But that would, as I say, could be in millions of years or thousands of years. I don't know what the orbit is coming out the other side, and of course NASA did not say. We don't have any data on the new orbit. Well, let's see. Okay, a couple scientific topics here. Japan this past winter had very unusual lightning in the winter time. And so anyway, there's a conference that's going to go on in Japan this summer. It took place last summer. And these are ground-to-cloud strokes, the very unusual type of lightning. But there was a rash of this in Japan this past winter, and so they had a meeting on that. Apparently it was last winter, but they had a meeting in June, and there's a book symposium out on this now. There's a book that's out on this now. But very unusual lightning in Japan. And of course, Japan is in that South Sea, the South China Sea area, one of the most electrically active places on the planet. The most electrically active place on the planet is the east coast of Florida. And I've talked about this before. One time I was flying in a plane. I was going down to probably Miami area and coming straight down the center of Florida. And I looked off. I was on the left side of the aircraft. And, of course, I had a view from about, maybe 75 miles away and up above the clouds. And I was watching, and that entire eastern coast of Florida was just pounding with lightning. Just ooh, boom, boom, boom. I mean, it was just up and down the whole coast. The storm clouds had formed above there. But at the eastern Florida coast is the most lightning-active place on Earth. The South China Sea is a close second. And, of course, that it may be higher. It's just that they don't have as much equipment over there. You have to understand factors like that also. But the Japan gets its share of lightning also. But this last winter, a year ago, they had a tremendous amount of very unusual lightning. And, of course, the scientists now are looking at, these clouds just form and the lightning forms, and like magic, the lightning comes shooting out of the clouds like Jupiter throwing lightning bolts magically. They just, but as I said, fairy tale science. How do clouds, which are batteries, shoot electricity out both the top and the bottom? In fact, they can see gamma rays, X-rays and gamma rays above the clouds. How do you get gamma rays and X-rays, very high energy discharges coming out of a battery? It's, you know, more fairy tale science. Here's another meeting that took place in September in one of the military bases, and they're looking at what are known as lunar swirls. One of the first things that happened when they started looking at the moon, our moon of planet Earth, our own very own moon, they started noticing what are known as swirls. And they were dust patterns in the form of a swirl. And they're going, what causes this? There's no atmosphere on the moon. And so they had a meeting, and they're trying to look at solar wind interaction and other things. But there again, you have the Tier 2 scientists poking around, and they're looking at data, of course, from satellite orbiters of the moon. But the response is clear. Mars has them, Earth has them, and of course the moon does. It, so these are little tornadoes that run on the moon. The sun, back in the days when I was working with Russian scientists, Alexei Dmitriev and his group were the first to observe tornadoes on the sun. And they were literally tornadoes. You could see them in the photographs marching along the sun, a tornado. Now, what on earth causes a tornado to roll across the surface of the sun? There's no atmosphere. You know, something was going on. That's about the time those guys got the hold of my original papers from the late 1970s, the scientific papers that kicked off all of my career. The Russian scientists got those, translated them, and then realized that that's what was going on. The electrical discharges were driving these weather systems. It was a quick translation also to understand that that was what was driving the hurricanes and the tornadoes on Earth. And that was also, of course, you can see them on Mars. You can see them now on the moon. So 40 years ago, they were already seeing these, and that's very much in the time frame when I came along and said, look, these are electrical phenomena. So you have electrical discharge phenomenon on the moon driving tornadoes. Visible result are these swirls. And so anyway, just a quick mention of that, that once again, electrical phenomenon in the solar system. You have, of course, above the Tier 2 scientists, you have the Tier 1 scientists that I know are listening to my show every week. They come to meetings where I'm at, talk to me at meetings. And these guys have learned a lot from what I've done. And they understand. Their goal is to understand reality. Excuse me. The only trouble is they work for the dark side, as you might call them. Okay, where are we going to go next? Okay, I read the listener email. Okay, quick commentary on Christmas 2011. Once again, listen to this coming Sunday if you get a chance, James Jancic, Feet to Fire. And by the way, James told me something when we were talking offline, and I should, I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning this. He had tried to get the people that were driving the Comet Elenin BS, that's the only word I can use for it, to interview them, and James is not a mild-mannered, nice guy interviewer. He is in a sense, but he's a hardcore facts kind of guy, and he's had the 2012 Mayan calendar, all of that stuff, people on his show, and he doesn't let them get away with just, oh, I've studied this for 30 years in the Mayan calendar. He drives down and tries to get data. He says, okay, if the end of the world's going to come, what's going to happen? If you're saying Planet X is going to come in 2012, where's your data? And, of course, these people don't have any. And so he has interviewed some of these people and exposed them on his show. So there are some of these people that don't want to go on his show because he's going to ask the real tough questions and demand real answers. And he knows what he's doing. He's read all of my books. He knows what the score is there. So at any rate, he invited the people that were driving the Comet Elenin hoax, that Comet Elenin was causing all these things. He invited them to be on his show, and they refused to be on his show. So that kind of tells you something about that source of information or misinformation. But anyway, listen Sunday. I'll be on there with a commentary on 2011 Christmas. But just a short note to my listeners, 2011 Christmas, what a mess this world is in. What a wonderful world we could live in, but it's just a mess created by greed, by self-interest, by military industrial complex, the money that is made off of war, the money that is made off of government, and just greed. That's the only thing you can say about the world, and the people of the world are suffering. The level of suffering in third world countries is staggering, and the people in the United States simply don't have a clue. People here are starting to lose their houses en masse. 2012 promises to be a bigger bust in the real estate market than any year before. But the one comment in the 1800s, if somebody stole somebody's horse, they hung them. Stealing somebody's horse was not an option because that was their livelihood. That was their ability to get around. Without a horse, you were dead. So horse thieves were simply hung. And that was the end of it. But today we have horse thieves stealing people's livelihoods, taking the jobs to China, stealing people's houses, banks foreclosing and making money. And believe me, banks make money on foreclosures. Don't feel sorry for the banks. They got money coming in on both sides during a foreclosure. So this is a money-making gig for the banks. So at any rate, the only thing I can say is that we live in a time when the people have to take things back. Be positive, take things back, and you can't let these people come in and rob you, rob your family. Your family is sitting there. You have to protect your family, and the horse thieves are back. So the horse thieves have to go. That's all I can tell you. And looking out towards 2012, the crazies and the 2012 doomsday predictors are coming out in mass. They're trying to use my name, my work, copy my work, and paraphrase my work. Everything, let me say, just about everything on the market today, why in the early days I talked about the Mayan calendars and being part of Venus. I talked about the planet X. I talked about the comets. I talked about these things long before anybody else, these crazies, came out of the woodwork. But what happened? The disinformation crews picked every one of my topics, which I had in order, explaining how the solar system works, how these things work, when the type of influence that planetary objects can have coming into the solar system. And they turned it into crazy stuff. So the idea was to take every topic that I had hit on, or including what Velikovsky did, take every topic, make it as crazy as possible, get as many goofy people out there, and believe me, there's no shortage of goofy people that will get up in front of a camera or post something on the internet and think that they're helping people, trying to get the word out there, and it's just garbage. So the misinformation crew has a whole laundry list of people that they can influence, and these people run out, jump up and down, scream, and then what they do is they really cloud the whole industry. Then you get Hollywood jumping in and saying, making movies about 2012 with big planets crashing into Earth, and on and on and on. All I can say is that 2012 is just going to increase. And the average person on the street is not going to be able to sift through it all. That's all I can tell you. The average person on the street is not going to know that when Planet X comes in, if it does, it's going to be a large comet. And that's why NASA, by the way, has to keep up this facade of all of its support Trekkie web pages that keep saying dirty snowball, little icy wander, etc., because they can't get into the topic that Planet X is going to look like a big comet. They have to keep pounding on that, and that's tier 2 science at its best, fairy tale science for the public. So anyway, 2012 is just going to be a massive surge, and it'll trap 95% of the people. But just remember that 95% of the people aren't going to make it through all of this anyway. And brothers and sisters, moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, cousins and nieces and nephews, you're going to see the vast majority, friends, neighbors, people you went to high school with, you're going to see the vast majority of the people get stomped on and not have any clue of what was coming. And I'm not saying Planet X is on the way, but all of the social disaster that's on the way, most people are going to be absolutely, number one, unprepared, and number two, clueless as to what's going on. I wanted to just mention something. Last week, I said I would be on Coast to Coast Wednesday night, which is last night. And not knowing, I mean, here's how it started. I emailed the producers at Coast to Coast and said, hey, I want to do a show following up on these two guys that quit the hurricane prediction and on this comet hitting the sun. Because in early October, I had done a whole series of shows with Coast to Coast on some comets hitting the sun at that time, and all the results and all the NASA hiding data, etc. So anyway, these were two topics, and so we were talking on the phone, and they said, okay, how about Wednesday night? Okay, great. Unbeknownst to us, at that Wednesday night, last night, which we were planning on, was December 21st, 1 year prior to 2012, December 21st. And so anyway, later the producers there found out, and they wanted to do some kind of special promotion of 2012 in the Mayan calendar, and the day 1 year before the December 21st, 2012. So anyway, I kind of got bumped, which was okay. I mean, life in the big city. So it was kind of an accident. But anyway, my name was used all week to advertise Wednesday night that I would be there. So a lot of people possibly went there to listen to me, and I wasn't there. And so anyway, tonight I'll be on Coast to Coast. So that was, I just want to explain what happened there. And so it was kind of a quirk of fate. Nobody had planned on that, but that's the way it turned out. That's what actually happened and why I got moved to Thursday night. Because I don't talk about 2012. And other people do. So anyway, okay, new products. This is something that I want to really kind of jump on, and I don't talk about products on this show very much, but something very exciting has happened. Just to start out with, I'm still selling the Dalton brand water filters, but here's what happened. Last year the prices went up, my prices, my purchase prices and everything, plus shipping went up. As everybody knows, the cost of oil went up. And so I absorbed those costs. I used to give away a free radio with the what I call the shortwave special, and that was the stainless steel Dalton water filter with four filter elements. And so I took away the free radio and said, okay, well, I'll keep the price the same. I won't give away the free radio, and that's how I'll absorb that extra cost. Well, right now the Dalton products are going up again and by a lot. And so I just can't absorb those costs anymore, and we could see this coming. So anyway, I got to planning, and here's what came out of the planning efforts. I was able to, because I've been in this business for a long enough time, I was able to name brand the equivalent products. And so it's hard to explain, but basically, right now I started on the 21st of December was I initialized the new product line under the name JMCCSCI.com water filtration and storage products. And this was a move that allowed me, number one, to radically reduce the pricing of water filter products, and the stainless, all of the products that you'll see are quality equal, exactly the same. But what it allowed me to do is to greatly reduce the pricing. I still sell the Dalton brand name, and those prices are have gone up significantly. But the pricing of my name brand products has come down significantly. For example, to give you an example, the Dalton water filter, stainless steel with four filter elements, for a long time had been $299. And that included shipping. Then I had to add shipping because I couldn't absorb that shipping cost anymore. And so typically about $15 for shipping. And then, as I said right now, the price for just the stainless steel unit is $329. Retail. And so $329 from $299, that's a pretty big jump, and it crosses that magic 300 number. And so but my name branded stainless steel canister with four ceramic filter elements is now $229. Now you can see this is a vast difference. That's a $100 difference in the sale price because I was able to name brand the ceramic filters, the stainless steel casing, etc. So also it allowed me to have new products. I have a new dome. It's called a dome. It's a short, fat ceramic filter made of the same high quality specifications as the standard 7-inch, what we call candle, the white ceramic candles. But the dome is about 3 inches tall and it's fat and it has a lot of surface area. So it has about 2.5 times the water filtration flow rate as the 7-inch candle. Plus there's a thing called head pressure. You gotta keep the filter element underneath water for it to flow at maximum rate. And so the short one does that. So you get a really higher flow rate. Now this one does not fit into the stainless steel container. So it cannot be used in the stainless steel container, but it does fit into the plastic high density polyethylene unit. And so I now can sell one of those, one of the high capacity filter elements along with the plastic housing. In that whole unit, the plastic housing and a single filter element is only $99. So that's a huge, and this will filter up to 20 gallons a day, a lot of water at a very low price. And so then let's me take another example. Prior to name branding, I offered the plastic high density polyethylene water filter product with 5 7-inch ceramic candles. That was $199 plus shipping. Now, I'm offering the same product because of name branding. I'm offering that instead of $199 for $169 plus shipping. So it's a $30 drop in price. And by the way, with the Dalton brand name filters, that particular unit went up to $230. So it's really, as of right now, a $60 drop in price due to the name branding. This is all, by the way, on my webpage, the jmccsci.com, and then just go to the sales page, you'll see all this information. I'm also introducing, once again, I sold these for a little while, the stainless steel water bottles. And they were quite expensive. And I sold some, that was great, but they weren't in a price range that made it marketable. And I really, really, really wanted to sell stainless steel water bottles. Not these cheapo ones you get for $3 or $5 in aluminum. They're a little thin case. You drop them, they dent. No, these are stainless steel, heavy-duty, serious water bottles that will last 5 lifetimes. And so anyway, these come with a ring cap. You can, and there's a 27-ounce size that fits in your bicycle cage or in the car, in your car cup holder. And then there's the big 40-ounce size, which I like myself. You can put a lot of water in there if you're on a trip. And plus, you take your water from your water filter, you put it in your own water bottle. Now you're not buying those plastic bottles. And I'll tell you something. Anybody that's still drinking water out of those plastic bottles, those thin, clear plastic bottles, those things in the sun or in a freezing condition or in cold conditions leach the chemicals into the water. You're drinking cancer if you're drinking water out of one of those bottles. So what I wanted to do was to provide a complete system of water filtration, water storage, in a carry a water bottle of high quality that you could carry with you. So I'm selling these water bottles, stainless steel water bottles, in 6-packs, and you can go to the website and see the very good prices. They're $12.95 for the 27-ounce size, and they're $17.95 for the 40-ounce size, sold only in 6-packs. We can't be goofing around with onesie twosies. It just costs too much to take them out of a box, put them in another box, put a stamp on it, and one person wants one person wants two. No. We're selling them in 6-packs. And believe me, you're going to need six packs for your family, for the cabin, one for the car, one for, that you take in your sports bag, one in your briefcase, whatever. Believe me, you will use those six up very quickly and you'll be back to order more, especially at these great prices. So I have the stainless steel water bottles, which is, for me, is huge. Get rid of those plastic bottles. Stop buying plastic water bottles, please. And then I was just in a place by the ocean recently, and the entire beach where I come down, and here's a beautiful, beautiful beach with rocks, and what a lovely beach. I'm going to take a walk on this beach, and it's so beautiful, and I'm looking out at the water, and this is on the ocean, by the way. And I get down to the beach, and the beach is covered, I mean wall-to-wall covered, with plastic bottles that have washed up from cruise ships, from the ocean. Miles of beach covered with plastic bottles. I have a picture of it, and I should post it on my page. In fact, I'm going to make a note here. Post plastic bottle pic on beach. Sorry for the delay here, but I got to post that picture. It's so gross. But at any rate, stop buying plastic bottles. Get yourself some of these stainless steel bottles. I made an effort to get the price down where these are reasonably priced in the and so please, everybody that's got a water filter, get these water bottles and start using them. Plus, it's healthy. You can put any kind of liquid in them, and so at any rate, I just want to stress that. Also, by the way, the Mountain House food is now back in stock. I got a full line of Mountain House products, just about everything. I'd say there's only one or two items that are not in stock. So go check out the sales page, jmccsci.com, and the Mountain House food is back in stock, and I hope that we will have that for a long time to come. So at any rate, as I said, let me just kind of summarize. I have name branded water filter products. It allows me to introduce new products. I'm still selling the Dalton. There's nothing wrong with the Dalton. It's the greatest stuff on the planet. It's just very expensive. So by name branding and doing some maneuvering, I was able to get the prices down. And, of course, that required a lot of effort on my part, and so I hope people out there appreciate this and use this. And as we head into 2012, I'm positioning myself to be really upfront in that water filtration and storage business. So I want to summarize that we now have a short dome filter element that is short. It's short and fat in high capacity, 2.5 times the flow rate of a standard 7-inch candle. Now, let me talk about the next item, which I'm very excited about personally. And it is a modular filtration, water filtration, and storage system. It comes with four seal top, screw on top. These top screw on and screw off. They're airtight. And something has been lacking in the water filtration industry, and I just filled the gap in that need. Once you get your water, I want to go back to the story of Moses. And also the Mayans talk about this too, where they sealed themselves in their houses because they knew that they were going to be passing through the tail of a comet. And the wise people of that time understood this. The waters were poisoned. You have to not only have a water filter, you need a pre-filter if you're still filtering water to get the gunk out before it goes into your clean water filter for final filtration. But you also need a factor of water storage. Say there's an emergency. The water goes out. Okay, now you're using the water from a lake, from a stream, from a sludge. There's a flood. Everything, there's water all over, but it's sludgy. There's dead animals in it. Okay, you have to first pre-filter that water. It goes through your water filter, but now your typical water filter, the stainless steel is about 2.5 gallons. The plastic one that I've been selling, the high-density polyethylene plastic container, is about 3.5 gallons. There is a need on the market for a big, serious water filtration system and modular storage system, and I've got this now on my webpage. And here's how it works. I'm using the new dome filter element technology, high capacity, and there's going to be one, simply one of those, in the top unit. These are 6.5 gallon mega size, super heavy duty, food grade plastic containers. And they're stackable. They also nest. In other words, when you have these in storage, the containers nest one inside of the other. And so they're easy to store. When all of a sudden emergency breaks out, you start either filling these up, if you still have tap water, quick fill them up. And there's three storage containers. There's one of the four tanks, 6.5 gallons, is the water filter itself. On the bottom, you have three tanks, 6.5 gallons, and you start filling these up with filtered water. When you fill one up, you pull off the top filtration unit, put the screw-on sealed cap on that one, you move the filtration unit on top of another tank, and you start filling that one up. When that one's full, you pull off the filter tank on the top, you screw on the screw on top on that tank, stack it in the corner with your other full water tank, and then you put in the third tank and start filling it up. All in all, you have a capacity of about 20 gallons, 19.5 gallons of storage capacity, and you can buy extra of the storage tanks. So this is a modular filtration and water storage system. You can have up to as much water as you want, and then when you need the water, you simply unscrew the sealed caps, take the water out as you need it, seal the cap again, and these tops can screw on and off 100,000 times if you want, and they will reseal. So this is an extremely important product, and it is priced very reasonably. It's $185. That includes the four tanks. One of the tanks is the actual filter itself, the water filter that you fill up with water, and it has the filter element in it. And then the other three tanks are simply to collect the water and store them. So this system is $185, and then there's a shipping cost. I think it's $26 to ship because it comes in two boxes. We wrestled with UPS on this, and I tried to get it shipped in one box, but it goes over their size limit, and the shipping was outrageous, so we had to fall back and ship it in two boxes. So the two tanks, the actual water filter with one tank comes in one box, the second box will have the other two tanks in it, and then you can buy for $45 an additional two tanks. Or if you want 10 tanks, you can buy 10 more tanks if you'd like in multiples of two. So this is a very, very important product. Plus, in this, you get a spare dome filter. This is something that if you're serious about having water, you need something to store the water in stackable containers, and this is it. There's nothing like this on the market today. A modular filtration and water storage system. So anyway, that's on the webpage too. These filter elements, the domes, we are going to have those in quantities in the future. Also, the filter elements, there's going to be a reduction in price on those. Now, I still sell the Dalton filter elements at the same price as before. I am absorbing the increase in price on those, but the name branded filter elements are going to be considerably less. So you can look on the web page and make your choice. These are equivalent quality. That's all I'm going to tell you is that, but some people say, well, I've been buying Dalton, I want Dalton. They're there. They're the same great product they've always been. And like I say, the name branding simply allows some savings for those people that are economic-minded. and they are equivalent great products. So that's where this water filter industry is going, and I had to jump on the forefront, as I said, and because I've been in this business a long time, it allowed me the opportunity to be there as a unique person in this industry and jump on this opportunity, and you are going to be the benefactors of that. And I want to thank everybody over the years that have purchased, because that's allowed me to get into this position where I can jump on this. And so, once again, in review, we've got the food, the Mountain House food. By the way, just a quick comment. I, of course, for years have sold the flax products. I have removed those because of the uncertainty in shipping. And it's just been a roller coaster ride in trying to predict and collect the correct amount of money for shipping. And it just has been an impossible thing to do. So at any rate, I pulled the flax products from the page just to explain why that happened. I wish I could sell that because it's the greatest product in the world. Okay, at any rate, once again, Mountain House food, everything except one or two items is in stock on the webpage. The Dalton product still there, available for sale, but the pricing has gone up. My name branding products has allowed me to reduce the price of equivalent product quality, but at a reduced price, and introduce new products. The stainless steel, for example, equivalent stainless steel filter with four filter elements, now only $229, and the Dalton is literally $100 more. The filter element is going to be a similar reduction. I have the new dome filter element that can be purchased in pairs. Remember, the dome will not fit into your stainless steel. It'll only fit into the plastic units. The new high density polyethylene plastic unit, which I have been selling, now available with one dome filter for just $99, and then the new modular system available for $185. That's a filtration storage unit, plus the stainless steel water bottles at a very reasonable price. That I insist that you go out and buy some of these and start using them. I'm about out of time, so Merry Christmas, everybody. I hope that this new product line is something that brings in your new year. It's going to be very important, and once again, puts me at the forefront in the water filter industry. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.